Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm with Brian Gaughan, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau, as well as the rest of the team of Lucasfilm, have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host Brian Gaughan and I are recording this week's show on Sunday, October 22nd, 2023. Brian, when this podcast posts on Wednesday this week, October 25th, we are just 6 days out from Halloween. Spooky season is upon us. And we've previously discussed, you decorate the house, right?
Yeah, I put out, I have the inflatables for Nightmare Before Christmas and also the Mandalorian with Baby Yoda.
Oh.
But I've been a little late this year because it's been too hot to go out there. So I have one 3-foot-tall Jack hiding in the corner behind some bushes, and people think I've lost my mind, so I got to put up the rest of them probably this weekend, probably this week, but it is, the neighbors are coming by, they're knocking on the door, and they go, is Brian okay? Do we have to have a care check? Is something going on?
Well, what's nice about that is they've come to rely on you and your holiday decorations.
I know. So I have to go out there and give the people what they want.
There we go. That's all we ask.
But it does make me feel good, too. I love them. And it's so weird how every year now Disney is putting out more and more elaborate things to put out there.
Coming up fast. Alongside the Nightmare Before Christmas stuff, which, by the way, this is the 30th anniversary of the release of Nightmare this year. In fact, they're doing screenings of it this weekend around the country.
And at the El Capitan, where I saw it the day it opened.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was great.
By the way, also celebrating its 30th anniversary is Hocus Pocus. In fact, to see all of the yard stuff that's being done for that. In fact, Nancy just bought a Binks plush cat from Shop Disney, which, by the way, we'll be talking about in a moment. But anyway, in honor of spooky season, the folks over at Lego Star Wars have just released 3 brand new Halloween-themed shorts. And if you go over to YouTube right now, you can catch them. There's one where Baby Grogu gets in the trick-or-treat spirit by pranking Mando while they're visiting Pelimoto's hangar at Mos Eisley, which I thought was fun. You also get to see the Emperor and Darth Vader get spooked by a kind of too-close encounter with the Sith Witch of Mustafar. And then there's a short, this is the one that wrestling fans are going to enjoy. It's a stormtrooper putting together a super tricked out mech outfit so he can then go toe-to-toe with a certain Star Wars villain. But anyway, these Lego Star Wars shorts are indeed short. I think the longest one is just 3 minutes long, but they are definitely charming.
And they're showing them on YouTube? It's not on Disney Plus?
Well, no. They're on the Star Wars, Star Wars channel over on YouTube.
Okay.
But again, speaking of charming, did you see that playtest footage from Disneyland Park this past week where the Imagineers trotted out? Well, I think they're calling them the BD-1 style droids.
I just saw a quick thing. Yeah, they were just, they surprised a lot of people, didn't they?
Well, yeah, because, I mean this in the kindest possible way, because remember when we first saw the concept art for Star Wars Galaxy's Edge? I mean, it showed happy little children interacting with droids and costumed Star Wars characters, and then they actually opened the lands in 2019, and hey, where are the droids?
Right.
And now, mind you, there was a droid on the Galactic Star Cruiser, and we'll get to that in a moment. But it was just one of these things where there were safety concerns and operational concerns. So if you looked at the pavement inside of Black Spire Outpost, there were all of these impressions of droid tracks. You know, they had right. gone through and textured the pavement to suggest that, oh, you just missed the droids. These three walking characters called Blue, Greeny, and the Orange One, and that keys off of the color detailing in each of the individual robots. The footage shows them being strolling around portions of the marketplace on Batuu. They make a stop at the droid depot to visit with their compatriots before they then march backstage. And they're cute. They stand on 2 feet. They kind of move like ducks or chickens or that sort of thing. And and as we just mentioned, just like with the Lego Star Wars Celebrate the Season Halloween shorts, if you go over to YouTube, you can watch the footage that was shot in the park of these things marching around. And they'd be a lovely addition if that's what this playtest results in. If you watch the footage of them marching in from backstage, you can then see the three techs, you know, that are manning.
Oh, are they walking behind?
Well, they have to.
Yeah.
Because, again, they have to have clear line of sight to prevent, you know, a child from hurting itself or that sort of thing. So it's going to be a big ask if they do this. You know, they're going to need the support teams to be with the droids in addition to the cast member that sort of behaves in character. So we'll see what happens there. But anyway, we were just talking about the Galactic Star Cruiser and how on that ship there was SK-620. That was the astromech that actually played a pretty big part in the storyline that the interactive guest experience guests had on their 2-day-long cruise aboard the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser. And this 100-cabin cruise ship on land had its last official voyage September 28th through the 29th. But Brian, have you seen the stuff that's been bubbling up since then? All of the chatter about how the Halcyon may fly yet again?
Didn't you and Len talk about that?
We have. But what's been interesting is more and more people who actually book passage after they announced that the Star Cruiser would be closing May 20th of this year. Disney has deliberately selected those folks to talk to because they were the ones who, when push came to shove and, oh, it's going to close and I'm going to miss my shot, were willing to pony up to $5,000 to get on board. And so a lot of the folks who booked passage on the Halcyon during this period have since received surveys, pretty lengthy surveys, I might add. And those who've been kind enough to share the questions they received with myself and Len, the questions ran along the lines of, what was your favorite part of the cruise? And if we were to offer a cut-down version of Galactic Star Cruiser, the experience, what would you want to see included as part of that experience? Maybe the last voyage of the Halcyon wasn't actually the last voyage of the Halcyon. Now there's a lot of stuff that has to happen first. Galactic Star Cruiser was deliberately shut down before the start of the new fiscal year right. for the Walt Disney Company. And this resource will have to be depreciated. The accountants will have to wade in and figure out what the tax hit is, and it's very likely we will see no movement, hear nothing official about anything involving the Halcyon till the start of the next fiscal year, the 2024 to 2025 fiscal year at the Walt Disney Company. And that doesn't start till October 1st of next year.
Well, they have it there. Can they make it a day experience? You go there and it's like a restaurant. And if people want to spend a night or two there, they can. Can they do something like that? And not make it the big production it was?
The problem with that is the Halcyon was deliberately built close to the studio so they could offer that, you know, we're taking a shuttle down to the surface experience, the box truck. But again, remember, this is a 100-cabin hotel.
Right.
And it doesn't have particularly high occupancy. And again, it's kind of a 5-minute drive to and a 5-minute drive back to Black okay. Spire Outpost. So there are operational challenges. Doesn't mean they can't be surmounted.
It just seems a waste that this thing is never been done before. And the people who want to see it, I mean, you would have gone back, wouldn't you have?
I have great appreciation for the cast. They were amazing. The physical plant had some absolutely wonderful aspects to it. when I'm not being a loudmouth talking in front of, you know, a microphone for numerous podcasts, I'm kind of an introvert. And it was like, and in fact, it was interesting. Chrissy, Len's sister, went with him on the very same voyage, the inaugural cruise on the Halcyon. And she talked about the fact that she initially had trouble interacting with folks. It wasn't a comfortable experience for her to walk up to the captain and chat with them and get a piece of information. And in fact, the moment that I must have been, I think I was maybe 5 or 6 hours into my cruise, and I went into the bar, and there was this lovely father and daughter in there at the bar, and they were like, "Jim, sit down, have a drink." And at that point, it was literally SK620 that kind of rolled up to the table. And it was one of these things where it's like, what's that doing here? And it's like, oh, we're hiding it from the First Order. And it's like, what? You know, and it's like, It was the father and the daughter that laid out the storyline that they were on the ship. And while we were sitting there, the captain walked up to the table and oh, hello, SK. And it's, you know, and then started chatting with the father and the daughter. And it was once she realized from the chat which side they had come down on and they were supporting the rebels, the captain actually gave the three of us a mission. And it's like, I need you to do this. I need you to go down to the loading dock. We have a piece of cargo I need your help with. And so we went down to the loading dock, and it turns out that the piece of cargo was Chewbacca. You know, and it was just sort of like, you have to help us hide him. And it was just, and that's how I got sucked in. It was the little droid rolling up to me.
They pulled you in, screaming and kicking, to be involved.
In my job, I get more stories by hanging on the wall and listening and observing than I do inserting myself into situations. You know, there's a classic mistake that people make sometimes when they work in the entertainment industry, and that they assume they're the smartest one in the room. And it's like, oh, right. God, no. You know from all of your time with, in fact, later in today's show, you're going to share some wonderful stories from folks you actually worked with on, you know, various films and TV shows and projects of the park and that sort of thing. But they're the one with the stories. You know, it's just like you have to actually learn to shut up and listen. And speaking of shutting up, you know, we have lots of news we have yet to cover here, folks. So we'll get to that in a moment. But just want to remind you that the news portion of today's show is brought to you by Touring Plan's own travel agency. So if you're thinking of heading down to Walt Disney World in the not-so-distant future, those obviously knowledgeable folks will help you plan your dream vacation. They'll even toss in a free subscription to Touring Plans. If you're planning on visiting Central Florida sometime soon, please check them out at touringplans.com/travel. So just talking about Halloween, I was at my local Target this past weekend, and at the very back of the store, they're already setting up the Christmas stuff, but I mean, it's behind the Halloween stuff, and I would imagine it's going to be one of those Disney World-like transformations. You walk out of the Magic Kingdom one night, you know, where the place is plastered with pumpkins, and then you come back to that very same theme park the next morning, and it's suddenly strewn with tinsel and holly. And if you've got a Star Wars fan on your holiday shopping list and have $500 to spare, have I got a gift suggestion for you. Shop Disney just began offering this past Friday a life-size, and when I say life-size, it's 3 foot, 1 inch tall, but it's a life-size recreation of Wicket the Ewok from Star Wars Return of the Jedi. And Brian, you have to take a look at this thing. It's a plush collector's figure, which, by the way, was produced to help celebrate the 40th anniversary of the release of Episode 6. But it weighs 30 pounds.
Wow.
But this Ewok comes with a simulated leather coat and a molded plastic eyes, nose, and mouth. And, okay, your Jack that's lurking behind the bushes, right. How tall is he?
He's 3 foot, which is really weird. It's strange to see a 3 foot Jack, because, as you know, they've got the and one of my neighbors has it, the 13 foot Jack. Yeah, it's creepy.
The animatronic one?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It is really creepy, and he's got a 13 foot skeleton next to it.
A couple of places around here have got those. And yes, they're impressive. But I also look at how you have to stake that thing down to keep it safe. Because I would imagine if a 13-foot tall skeleton fell on you, that would be painful and possibly involve a lawsuit or two.
Well, we all have our front yards are as take as much space as the houses do in Pasadena. So unless you're trespassing on the lawn, you'll be pretty safe from it.
No, I get that. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's what I've always loved about Pasadena, you know, just so many of the craftsman homes and just that was when California wanted to be pretty.
Okay. I'm looking at the Wicked.
Yep.
And it looks like a zombie. It looks like Walk of the Wicked Dead.
All right.
Look at those eyes. Oh, my gosh. He's got no life in those eyes.
This is the part where I make you go back and actually watch the footage from
I'll watch
from the original, you know, Return of the Jedi.
Okay, you're right. They did look like little
didn't
creatures.
Didn't they go back in? Wasn't that with the special edition? Wasn't that one of the things they put in? They actually made the eyes blink because they did look kind of dead, like teddy bears back in the day. So, anyway, speaking of Return of the Jedi, I mean, do you think we're ever going to go back to Endor? I mean, I know, I want to say actually for one of the Star Wars Lego specials, they did supposedly go back to Endor. I want to say it was Leia and Han who took Ben back there.
Yeah, were they there for a vacation or something?
That's it exactly.
And then Ben steals the Millennium Falcon.
There we go. It's a lovely family story. But face it, remember, we have that new Star Wars movie that Charmin Obadecino supposedly has in the works, the ones that's supposed to be set 15 years after Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker, and reportedly has Rey supervising the training of two Force-sensitive kids when it comes to the ways of the Jedi, and season 2 of Star Wars The Bad Batch. We got to see a Wookiee that had been trained in the Force, so now why not an Ewok?
Okay, if they want to make merchandise, we'll fly off the shelves, you know, to have some kind of new Ewok, character. I mean, you know, isn't it about the merchandising sometime?
Hang on. I have to check something here. This is why Google is a thing. I think there may already be one of these.
Oh.
There's kind of another blue teddy bear in there.
Oh, yeah. That's from the Jedi Adventures, right?
Right. Okay. He's got fangs, though. I mean, that could... I don't know. We'll do some more homework and get back to you folks on that one. But anyway, back to that new Star Wars movie, the one where Daisy Ridley is supposed to come back, and there's a name's leaked out. And supposedly it's Star Wars A New Beginning, which I have to say, if that's really the name of this new film...
Two on the nose.
There we go. But speaking of new beginnings, you have to have seen in the past week or so that interview with Matthew Vaughn, the director of Kick-Ass and X-Men First Class, where he talked about what he'd do if he were given the chance not just to make a Star Wars movie, but to perhaps revisit the original trilogy.
No, I saw the bits and pieces that he was talking about it, and I didn't get the reaction. Were people losing their minds over what he was saying?
Not really. I mean, I think it was one of the things where he admitted, like, look, people would say you're an idiot to try, but that idea excites me. And why is it that the characters, the Star Wars characters from 1977 are so hallowed that you can't redo them for a new audience? And he then went on to say, that's what Disney wants, after all, a new generation of Star Wars fan to embrace these characters. And as for the old generation of fans, if you do these remakes of the original Star Wars movies well enough, hopefully the older generation of fans will enjoy them too. And I can't necessarily get all that negative about that sort of reasoning. I mean, look, I like what Paramount has done with the new set of Star Trek films that they've released theatrically. I think they're called the Kelvin period films.
Right.
Likewise, I have to say the limited series like Star Trek Discovery or Star Trek Strange New Worlds, where they have different actors playing different versions of already beloved characters. I've enjoyed those.
A lot. I think Strange New Worlds is one of the best series, Star Trek series, since the original. The writing seems like very much the same. And I love it that Captain Pike has got actually has a kitchen in his in his room. Not only that, he showed how to make another meal out of leftover spaghetti. So I paused it. I went to the kitchen. I had leftover spaghetti. I did what he did, like a carbonara type of thing. It was delicious.
Okay, now I got to watch this episode. Okay.
Yeah.
I do have one request. If it happens, if Matthew Vaughn does get the opportunity to revisit, you know, the original trilogy, just look, no more Death Stars. Or planet-killing giant weapons. Okay, saw it in New Hope, saw it in Return of the Jedi, saw its prequel in Rogue One, you know, saw the Next Generation and The Force Awakens, not to mention its cameo in Star Wars Andor. We need a new galactic threat, all right? Something along the lines of Publisher's Clearinghouse. You know, just something different. That's all I'm asking.
Well, isn't that the basically Thrawn is going to be something different?
Okay. All right. Really smart guy versus giant super laser that shoots through space. I can get behind that. Oh, by the way, we were just talking publishing. There was some Star Wars comics news that came out of New York Comic Con just this past weekend. Marvel Comics announced after 42 issues, its Star Wars Bounty Hunter series is coming to a close with the final issue of this 4 years in the making saga hitting newsstands in January of 2024. But the good news is Marvel Comics is launching a brand new Star Wars-related series, one that it's fairly certain fans will embrace. And this new book will follow the adventures of Jedi Master Mace Windu. By the way, Samuel L. Jackson has made it known to the folks at Lucasfilm that he'd love to play this character again. And the folks at Lucasfilm were like, well, wait a minute, Revenge of the Sith, you fought with the Emperor, you know, got zapped by hand lightning and then blown out a window of the Galactic Senate building, falling umpteen million floors to whatever.
Okay, well, the Emperor fell down a thing. Darth Maul got cut in half and he came back. Yeah, don't people come back all the time?
Well, that it's so interesting you say that because Samuel L. Jackson, and I'm trying to find a family-friendly way to say this, but he said, well, you know, Mace is a pretty tough MF, you know, and so it's like, I'm sure he came through that okay. So perhaps you're right. Perhaps he will, in fact, come back. But let's be honest, sometimes when an actor comes back to play a once-beloved character, the audience doesn't necessarily come back to the theater to see him, to embrace him. And case in point, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Oh, by the way, did you see we finally actually have a release date for the physical
Blu-ray? No, I didn't see it. Oh,
December 5th of this year. Now,
okay.
People are now asking, okay, so we know that. When does Dial of Destiny show up on Disney Plus? And so reached out to friends at that subscription streaming service, and they said the folks at Walt Disney Studios Home Entertainment would like to sell a few hundred thousand copies of that James Mangold movie before it shows up over here. So they're saying January of next year, more likely February, because Disney's making deals with retailers around the country in regard to what gets placed in an end cap during the holiday season. You know, so the whole notion of, hey, we're going to give you a pile of Dial of Destinies that you get to sell, and oh, by the way, you know, after just 4 weeks it shows up on Disney Plus, that's not going to cut it.
With what is happening at Targets and Best Buy, are there going to be any retailers that are going to be selling DVDs?
That's the Disney argument. Like, yeah, it's a DVD. Yeah, it's a Blu-ray. But it's Indiana Jones. You know, there's going to be a lot of people who, you know, they won't necessarily stop. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, there's a pile of DVDs over there. But on the other hand, if it's an end cap that has Harrison Ford as Indy on the top of it, it's like, oh, The argument is, yes, we are in the death of the dinosaurs' days of physical media, at least as far as big box retailers are concerned. But there will be special items during that period. In fact, it's kind of the same thing with the Taylor Swift Eras Tour right. film that's in theaters right now. Retailers are already, you know, to the effect of, when is that coming? When will that be available in Blu-ray? And boy, will we put that on an end cap.
Yeah, and even Costco will have a display of, you know, that DVD. Yeah, you're right.
There you go. And the other thing also is what's special about Indy is, for example, in conversations with friends at Home Entertainment, they're already talking about an Indiana Jones Ultra 4K collection where all five films, Raiders right through Dial of Destiny, will be in one collectible case, which, by the way, will look like the Dial of Destiny. You know, who wouldn't want to buy that if you're an indie fan and then, you know, you put it up on in front of your flat screen and never open it? By the way, speaking of Raiders, when we get back, Brian has an amazing story about how the truck chase from that Steven Spielberg film actually got storyboarded. One quick Indiana Jones-related story before we turn things over to Mr. Gahn. I was reading my copy of Raiders, The Making of Raiders of the Lost Ark, to see if there was something I could share about the truck chase. And there's a passage in this book that has a surprise cameo by a sitcom star from the 1970s. So anybody who knows the Harrison Ford story knows that during those years where he was struggling as an actor, he had a day job. And his day job was, he was a carpenter. As the story goes, he had been hired by Valerie Harper, the star of Mary Tyler Moore and Rhoda. There we go. And he was doing some work at her house and fell off a ladder and broke his wrist.
Oh.
The wrist healed, but it was never the same. So, of course, now when he gets Han Solo, it's like, oh, I'm holding a blaster. No big deal. All right, I just hold a blaster and, you know, somebody in post, you know, does the light beam and I'm good. But then he gets Raiders. And Raiders, Indy wields a whip. And it was one of these things where it's like, oh, of course, I have to wield the whip with the wrist that I broke. And this suddenly starts to become really painful. And so, you know, and Glenn Randall, the stunt coordinator for Indy, you know, tried to show him, you know, well, the first they tried, well, can you whip with the other hand? And, oh, God, it looks terrible. No, you have to whip with your dominant hand. And so it's like, I'm sorry, this is what this character does. And they then began to try to do the whipping scenes early in the day, you know, and then they tried doing them at the tail end of the day to see if that made them any better. But the poor guy had to do this for all five films. And I can't imagine being in his 80s now and doing that for Dial of Destiny. But when they did Raiders, the storyboards for Raiders, you know, they obviously did the scenes. This is where Indy uses the whip. Sorry, Harrison. But Brian, from your time in the entertainment industry, you have some stories to share about how the storyboards for Raiders were actually put together.
Right. Just a little background. I met Bill Stout when I was the production assistant for the art department on Masters of the Universe. So I learned all about storyboards. I learned all about design. I learned all about production design and building of the sets. So the at least on Raiders, the only things that were really storyboarded were the action sequences and something that would cost a lot of money because they wanted to see it. And the director would come up and talk to the artist and he would say, this is what I have in mind. The artist would do it. And then when they would get on set, they would basically follow the storyboards. And Bill Stout, who was the production designer on this, you know, we always were talking about, and he started storyboard work on The Hitcher. Mm-hmm. And then he got a job at design to be a production illustrator on Conan the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. And in that, when he was on there, on the show, they were in the same office buildings as, at first it was Spielberg was working on 1941. So oh, no. John Milius was going back and forth mm-hmm. to Conan, the mm-hmm. Barbarian, and then 1941 because he helped write the screenplay. Mm-hmm. So when Bill started his production, his receptionist was Kathleen Kennedy. She was just a young receptionist, somebody that was just answering the phones mm-hmm. and for Bill and the art department. Mm-hmm. Then, almost right away, she mm-hmm. became John Milius' assistant.
Okay.
And then she became Steven Spielberg's assistant. And now we know, you know, mm-hmm. now we know what she is. But it all started when she was just the mm-hmm. most competent person there. And mm-hmm. she just moved her way up. And they went to Spain to film Conan the Barbarian. And Bill gets a phone call. And it's Kathleen. And she says, Bill, we have an artist that's mm-hmm. working on storyboards here. Steven doesn't like him. He thinks he's terrible. Mm-hmm. Can you do the truck sequence? Because Bill had read the script already, so he knew the film. Mm-hmm. Can you do the truck sequence for us? Mm-hmm. And Bill says, Kathleen, you know I'm in Spain. Mm-hmm. I can't do this, but mm-hmm. I have a friend mm-hmm. who he's an artist in my studio mm-hmm. and he has worked at Hanna-Barbera on storyboards and he would be perfect. Mm-hmm. And that person was Dave Stevens.
Dave, really?
Yeah, it blowed my mind too. And if you look online, you can see some of Dave's mm-hmm. Storyboards and they are exactly mm-hmm. what's up on the screen. And wow. and Bill loved doing storyboards because mm-hmm. when he was first asked to do storyboards, he goes, sure, I'll do storyboards. Mm-hmm. It's like directing on paper. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of directors will use the storyboards mm-hmm. because they make sense. And a lot of times the budget mm-hmm. is always made looking at the storyboards.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And remember, you know, when we're talking about Raiders, I mean, there's the famous story about because they overspent so much on 1941, right. you know, the notion was, okay, we're going to do Raiders on a budget. So, I mean, the big scenes, the big expensive stuff was boarded within an inch of its life. So that's what I always love about the scene where Indy goes to the archaeological dig and you get the suggestion of a giant dig site. But if you're right. actually looking at it, it's not that big. But, you know, it's just enough to suggest that it's a massive dig.
It goes on forever, yeah.
Yeah, and then the whole notion of they're digging in the wrong spot. But anyway, I'm sorry, I disrupted. You were talking about Dave.
But the way that Dave got, he connected with Bill is Dave was one of the original people at Comic-Con. He didn't put it together, but he lived in San Diego. He loved comics. So he would just hang out with people and he got to know all the artists. He had never had any kind of art school or anything. All his stuff was pure mm-hmm. natural talent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he was a good friend of Bill, and Bill got him several jobs. One was working on Tarzan and the Star Wars comic strip. He would just do the inks
mm-hmm. okay.
for that. Bill originally did the mm-hmm. Star Wars or Tarzan. Mm-hmm. And then when he had to go on to other things, Dave came in. Dave worked with Doug Wiley. I think he worked with him at Hanna-Barbera.
Okay.
They worked on, believe it or not, the Godzilla Power Hour.
Oh, Ted Cassidy.
Yep.
Okay.
And yeah. Super Friends. I would love to see some of his storyboards for Super Friends.
That would have been killer.
Especially the monkey.
Yep, yep.
And then he was working on the Rocketeer at Bill's studio when Kathleen gave him a call. And then he started working on the truck scenes. And like I said, it's almost exactly the way. And when you look at him too, mm-hmm. Dave was a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And he had style. He knew exactly what he was doing. If you see mm-hmm. Rocketeer, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, it yeah. reads like a movie. They could have used his mm-hmm. comic book mm-hmm. for the movie. They're that detailed. And then when we were at Comic-Con, Bill's booth was always next to Dave. And Dave and I would always become Comic-Con friends because I would help him set up his booth. I'd, you know, whenever he was leaving, you know, if he went on a break, I'd sit behind this booth. Mm-hmm. He was one of the most fascinating, incredible people you'll ever meet. And one of my best friends I've met because of him, mm-hmm. Rebecca, mm-hmm. and he was one of his models. Mm-hmm. And we kind of started talking mm-hmm. Harry Potter, and we got to be friends. Mm-hmm. And it was just fun watching. Dave would always have a booth babe. Mm-hmm. And he would always have a girl, and a lot of times they looked like Betty Page.
Thank you. You answered my question without me having to answer the question.
And they would sit there, and you would see the same guys. They would like circle the booth like sharks, and they'd go out of sight for about 2-3 minutes, and then they'd come back. And it was really fun. And Dave was just, he had a great sense of humor. And one year he wore a pirate shirt.
Oh,
and it was, and everybody made fun of him mm-hmm. because it was, you know, he was in a pirate phase. But the thing about our booths, mm-hmm. when our booths were together, there was a lot of people who were friends. One mm-hmm. one guy, John Kukaloris, mm-hmm. he sold merchandise mm-hmm. and like, you know, old stuff. Another guy sold old books, and they were all this group that was, you know, and that Dave was part of. And we all hung out. We all went to dinner with each other. It was really a wild thing. Well, it was really great, especially the day that Frank Frazetta came to town.
Shifting now to a topic we covered on our last show this month, Captain EO. It turns out you also know people who worked on that project as well.
Yeah. At the time, in that area, at Masters of the Universe was shot at the Culver Studios, which mm-hmm. was known as the Laird Studios, which is now known as Amazon Studios.
Okay.
And it was the original Thomas Inch Studios. Mm-hmm. And then RKO bought it after Thomas Inch died. Mm-hmm. And that's where Citizen Kane got King Kong, Gone with the Wind. That's where that was filmed.
Wow.
Yeah, at the studio. As a matter of fact, the offices, which mm-hmm. is an antebellum mansion mm-hmm. front, was used as, I don't know if it was used as Terra, but it was used as one of the mansions in Gone with the Wind.
Okay, got it. I know what you're talking about.
So my friend mm-hmm. Ed Eith, who mm-hmm. is known to a lot of people, he worked on Happy Time Murders. Mm-hmm. He was one of the last people to see Mr. Jim Henson alive. He walked down the hallway and he said mm-hmm. to Jim, "You don't look good. Are you okay?" And he goes, mm-hmm. "Yeah, I just have a cold." Mm-hmm. And then 2 days later, he was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And he designed a lot of the newer mm-hmm. Muppets. Do you remember Spam Hamberson?
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, Spamela Anderson, yes.
Hamberson, yeah.
In fact, let me do the Disney connection here. Leslie Carrera was hired to do Spamela Anderson yes. for Muppets Tonight. And she was an original member of the cast of the Adventurers Club at Walt Disney World. In fact, she used to do a wonderful maid character called Dusty Cabinets. And Leslie, for a time, everybody agreed Leslie was brilliant, but they could never figure out what to do with her. And she was frustrated working with the folks at Henson, especially on Muppets Tonight. She used to talk about her time there, about how it was kind of like being in the backyard and the boys had pulled up the ladder to the treehouse, and you stood at the bottom and yelled at them. You know, it's like, "I want to play too." And said, you know, but, you know, I did what I could with Pamela Anderson. But it took another 20 years, but she finally got a Muppet character. In fact, she was a Sesame Street Muppet that broke through and became an enormous success. And that's Abby Cadabby, the fairy in training. That's Leslie. And she finally got her very own breakout Muppet character with Plush, and every year is part of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade and that sort of thing. So it's been so wonderful to watch Leslie finally have her success. But again, I remember when she left Disney to go work for Henson and do Spamela, and just was so frustrated because it's like, this is my dream job and they won't let me up in the treehouse. So anyway, you were saying.
Well, yeah. So Ed has worked on that. He worked on Back to the Future 2, mm-hmm. and he was responsible for developing the future. for designing the future. Everything that he came up with, mm-hmm. like remember the dehydrated pizza?
Okay, okay.
He figured out how to do that. You would put the little pizza thing in it, mm-hmm. you'd close it, somebody behind would mm-hmm. switch the pizza, mm-hmm. and then you open it, and there it was.
Wow. Okay.
So he would come up with that stuff. Well, anyways, mm-hmm. he worked on Flight of the Navigator. Mm-hmm. He was the designer on that with Randall Kleiser. And Randall was the director. And Randall was walking around showing him Culver Studios, and they ran into Rusty Laminarda.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He's part of Michael Jackson's posse.
There we go, okay.
And he wrote and produced mm-hmm. Captain EO.
That he did. Mm-hmm.
So Captain EO was taking two sound stages, mm-hmm. and Ed, being the entrepreneur he is, mm-hmm. slips Rusty his card and say, listen, if you need anything, give me mm-hmm. a call. Mm-hmm. That night, mm-hmm. Rusty gave him a call and said, can you do storyboards? Mm-hmm. And Ed said, sure, I can do storyboards, having never done storyboards in his life.
I love how this industry works.
Get over. So there he
fake
was.
Fake it till you make it. Okay.
He got the script. They delivered the script to his house. He read the script, and he started doing the storyboards. And I think they needed them in a couple days.
Okay.
And he was working on it, and he got bored. Mm-hmm. And so he drew this picture of this bikini girl on a mm-hmm. beach, and she's mm-hmm. rubbing lotion on herself, and he goes, cut to mm-hmm. a girl on a beach is why, you know, soaking up the sun and da da da, and then you turn the page and you're back to the action. Mm-hmm. So he just did that, you know, just because he was losing his mind. So 2 days later, he gets a phone call from Rusty. He goes, Ed, we are casting the girl on the beach. Would you like to come and mm-hmm. Sit in on this? Mm-hmm. So they all got the joke. Mm-hmm. But he also was probably responsible for breaking the cameras.
Oh, yes. We told this story on on the last show. But please, explain about the shot from this 3D movie that supposedly broke the cameras.
The only way, mm-hmm. Ed said, I actually just asked him this, and mm-hmm. he goes, he did this high shot, and mm-hmm. I think it's the shot where you're behind the queen mm-hmm. and you see everybody. And the POV, and this is what Ed said about this, he goes, the POV from that angle mm-hmm. was the best shot to tell the story of that moment. Clearly, Francis Ford Coppola agreed.
Okay.
And not only did he agree, he might have said, who is this Ed Eyth, and why is he having me bring these cameras on the scaffold?
Oh, God.
So Ed went on to work in Hollywood mm-hmm. for a long time. He's now teaching in, I believe, North Carolina at mm-hmm. the Institute of Art. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he designed Spamula Hamberson, mm-hmm. The fly mm-hmm. in the Kermit's bio.
Okay.
And also my favorite character, Johnny Flama.
Oh, Johnny Fiamma, yes.
The
Sinatra-esque, what's his ape flunky called?
I forget what the monkey's called. I think he might have designed the monkey, too.
Okay.
But, he was a big part of Henson for a while. And he designed all the weird characters in Happy Time Murders. Have you seen that?
I have.
So, yeah, he works with Brian a lot. And Brian and Lisa, they always have him on a Rolodex. If they need something, like just a quick sketch, they'll give him a call. Mm-hmm. Because, mm-hmm. You know, the Hensons believe in family, and he was part of the family.
I don't know. Absolutely. You know, that, and, you know, there's a consistent look and style that deliberately because of that.
One thing they did, okay, most directors like to use storyboards for mm-hmm. big action sequences, but William Friedkin on mm-hmm. To Live and Die in L.A. Mm-hmm. did not use storyboards for the car chase sequence. The stunt coordinator used Hot Wheels.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
So wow. He basically had the Hot Wheels, and he showed mm-hmm. what would happen with the Hot Wheels.
Jeez. Did they do the same thing with French Connection?
No, French Connection wasn't supposed to be the way it was. Mm-hmm. French Connection was shot without any permits.
Mm-hmm. Oh!
Was shot through the streets. There was a time where the stuntmen missed a cue and they got in that car crash. You see it in there. Oh. And Friedkin got mad, but he goes, just keep on going. Mm-hmm. Friedkin designed what he came up with, nobody had ever come up before, to build the suspense. Mm-hmm. He would cut to the foot going from the gas pedal to the brake. And you would be in the car with them. Mm-hmm. And yes, Bullet is possibly one of the best chase scenes ever at the time, but he really upped the ante with French Connection.
I literally just rewatched that chase scene within like the last month. And it's the super grubby version of New York City. It's a welcome to the 1970s, but it's brilliantly done. Anyway, but before we close here, Brian wanted to share something that he and his bride had recently watched on their enormous flat screen that actually has a tie to Star Wars Andor.
Yes, it's a new series called Bodies, and it's on Netflix, and it just started on Friday, and it's an 8-episode, really bizarre story that takes place in 4 different time zones, 1890, 1941, 2023 and 2053. Mm-hmm. And I'm not giving anything away because you should watch it. I've seen 5 episodes so far. We're going to watch the next 3 once I get off this phone call. Okay. And who is in it is Kyle Soler, who played Cyril Karn in Andor. And I did not notice him right away. If you remember when Andor came out, he did a lot of interviews, and he had that big bushy beard.
Yep.
That's why. And he plays the detective in 1890. Mm-hmm. And talking about an actor who doesn't play to casting, he is the only American in it, and he has a perfect British accent. It's supposed to take place in Whitechapel. And 2 years, and it's 2 years after Jack the Ripper.
Okay.
And he is the detective who's trying to discover why this naked body ended up in this one place.
Wow. No, I've been hearing great things about Bodies.
Yeah, it's nothing but good. And he is, well, we love him in Andor, but he is so good in this. And I think that his storyline is the best. I think it's the 1890 is possibly the best storyline. And he really is showing that he is, he's up there. He's one of our great actors right now. But yeah, it's really nice to see. It's really cool to see. It will keep you guessing till the very, very end.
That's the thing. I'm trying to go in clean, so shut up.
Yeah, I'll shut up.
Now, all I've heard is it's a time travel murder mystery where the only thing in the 4 different periods is have in common is this naked female body.
And no, male body.
Male body. Okay. Yeah. And it's just sort of like, it sounds like an ingenious premise. Can't wait to watch it. But anyway, those were all great stories. Thank you. That was good fun. All right. Well, again, if you enjoyed that, folks, Brian and I will be back in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, Brian, where can folks find you on social media?
Well, I'm spending my time on Instagram, and I'm just throwing things up there that are fun. Like I discovered Mountain Dew has a spooky drink out, so I talk about that and other things. It's BT Gahan, GAUGHAN.
Okay.
So I'm there. Say hi to me, and there you go.
Okay. And well, social media wise, I'm still on Twitter or X or whatever they call it. Likewise, Instagram as Jim Hill Media. Over on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. Also, got a couple other podcasts here. We wouldn't mind if you check them out. We got, of course, Disney Dish, which I do with Len Testa. Also, Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor. We just recorded a brand new episode with him earlier this afternoon. And by the way, Mr. Taylor also has Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, which he does with Charles Hood. We also have Marvelous Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams. And he, in turn, has his own Patreon project, 32nd Street, which is about Madison Avenue and everything that goes on in advertising. Speaking of Patreon, Disney Unpacked, the video project that I'm doing with Len Test and Jim Shule, which takes you behind the scenes on many of your favorite attractions at the Disney parks. That's finally launched on Patreon. Our very first episode about the Magic Carpets of Aladdin debuted earlier this month. But the second episode of the series, which is about Crush's Coaster, the first ever, and to this day, the only spinning roller coaster at a Disney theme park, that goes live on November 5th. So if you want to get a taste of what we're up to, check out the Disney Unpacked YouTube channels. We have some samples of the shows there, and there's some fun stuff. If you could do Brian and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend the show you're listening to right now, looking at Lucasfilm, that would be great. And I think that's going to do it for this week. So Brian and I will be back in 2 weeks' time, first week of November. Till then, take care.